This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Vesper Project goes on display at the Contemporary Arts Center today, and my guests this afternoon, Titus Kafar and CAC curator Stephen Maticio. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And it was 5 years ago that the paths of artist Titus Kafar and the Vesper family crossed when a man named Benjamin Vesper defaced one of his paintings in the Yale Art Gallery. And after being arrested, the two have kept in correspondence and they discussed Vesper's family history. Kafar incorporated this information into his art by creating a body of work titled The Vesper Project. And talk to us, Titus, about how this project got started in the first place. You had this experience with Benjamin Vesper, and that was one of the big influences on it, wasn't it?
It actually started even before that. I had been working in my studio, and I had been feeling like I was having these situations in front of the paintings where I was starting to remember things that that I hadn't remembered before, which was strange. The long and short of it is I started to feel like maybe there was something going on with my memory. And I became very concerned about that. And at one point, I was standing in front of a painting, and I kind of had this flashback experience where I would say a pretty difficult situation sort of came back to me, and it made me feel as though I couldn't really trust my memory because this information had been sort of subverted in my head for a long time. I called my mom and talked to her about it, and she said, yeah, that actually happened. I'm surprised you didn't realize that, you didn't remember it. And that is actually what started this whole trip down memory, and the way that memory, for me, I'm realizing or realized through this process, is not something that we can think of like this fortress, this strong place where everything is protected, but it's porous. Things come in and things come out, and what feels real may not be, and that's really what this project is all about.
Memories, they are a strange thing, aren't they, Titus? I mean, you can't be sure what you're adding to from in your head or what's real, what's not. I mean, that's just the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've started to think about it in terms of sort of a file, a memory as a file that you open. We think that we open that file, we look at it, we close it, we put it back in the file cabinet, and it's sort of protected and safe. But in fact, every time you open that file, things sort of fall into that file.
Layer after layer that you don't notice.
And then when you reopen that file again, those things that fell in just become incorporated into the memory itself. And so we can't distinguish. Most of the time when we are recalling something, we're not actually recalling that thing. We're recalling the last time we recalled it. So all these things become mixed together. This idea between like what is fact, what is fiction, what's our memory, what's confabulation, how are these things working in our minds?
Tell us about what happened with Benjamin Vesper and how that influenced this project.
Well, it started because I had been doing these paintings where I had been playing with this idea of who is the actor on the painting. What I mean by that is there are these paintings where they exist as very traditional paintings, and then there's something else that happens to the painting. So in some cases, the paintings might be whitewashed with oil paint, or they might be submerged in tar, or they might be sliced open. And I started to think about who was the actor. I felt like I was making these paintings and I was doing these, but in some cases, I felt like I was acting out the role of another individual as they were engaging with these particular bodies of work that I was making. And so as I started doing that, I started looking into these individuals and these characters, and I started doing this research on this particular family. But it didn't even start with the research. In fact, it started with an experience, as I said, when I was in the studio. And that led me to a conversation with a psychiatrist friend of mine. And I said, hey, I had this sort of flashback moment. And by the way, I'm also feeling like I'm hearing these narratives when I'm working on a painting. He said, you mean you're hearing voices? I said, no, not hearing voices.
No, not the same thing.
It's different. Right. It's different. And so he said, well, tell me more about this narrative that you're hearing. And I said, well, there's sisters and this mother and blah, blah, blah. And I started going through the whole story. And he's like, okay, tell me more. And so at the end of the day, He said, okay, I'm going to get back to you in a couple of weeks. He got back to me and he read all of the things that I had said to him. And I said, I didn't really realize it was that extensive. So we started this practice of every day sort of writing down everything that we were hearing. And the more that we did that process, the more we realized that we weren't really making anything up, that we started doing research and looking into it. And that's when we found that these stories sort of were there. And that really started to mess with my head a little bit and get me thinking about this whole idea of collective consciousness and these sort of collective memories. Is that even possible? Does that make any sense? Where does this stuff come from? Where is this stuff coming from? And Benjamin was just the sort of anchor for the story. I stepped in and, as I said, started feeling very uncomfortable with where I was going in my own self with the story, but just felt like I couldn't let go. So I just followed the family wherever they told me to go.
So who was the Vesper family?
So Benjamin, Abram Vesper is the great-grandfather. Benjamin Vesper is the individual who sort of lives in our time, and it was my correspondence for the story, for the narrative.
And in the end, I take it, after your discussions with the counselor, that you're perfectly normal, right? I mean, there's nothing unusual about what you're going through.
I don't know if I'm perfectly normal.
You're creative.
But, I mean, that's, in fact, a really interesting conversation in itself. I was, after this project started, I really became interested in psychiatrists, neurologists, and I gathered a bunch of them together to have a conversation about the way the brain works and about the creative process. Scott Barry Kaufman is a neurologist who I had the opportunity to meet and work with. And on the panel discussion, one of the very interesting things that that Scott said was, there is this thing that happens for artists where they sort of go in and out of these spaces that in some cases would be described as a kind of schizophrenia. They enter into these characters, they engage with these characters. But the difference for an artist and somebody who's struggling with this is that artists generally have the ability to sort of move in and out of that. Most painters that I talked to about the process didn't connect to it. When I started talking to fiction writers, they got it immediately. You know, I would say, you know, I'm hearing these narratives and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And they said, well, yeah, of course.
You're a writer. Yeah. Oh, wait.
They said, if you're writing a story and you're dictating to your characters what's going to happen, then you're probably not writing a good story. But if you're writing a story and you feel like those characters are speaking to you and directing you, then you're probably headed towards something much better.
And let's see, the Vespers lived, the family was in New England, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this was a family that appeared to be a white family, but they actually, by the legal standards of the day, could have been classified as an African-American family.
Is that right? They were passing.
Okay.
Yeah, as it's called.
Interesting. Steve, what inspired you to bring the Vesper Project to Cincinnati?
Well, I've been following Titus's work now for probably 6 to 7 years, and I've just been sort of watching the evolution of it and had the opportunity to see the Vesper Project in New York when it was showing there in Chelsea, and was so taken by the presence that I felt. Like, oftentimes you go into a gallery and as close as you try to get to the work, both spatially as well as kind of emotionally, there's always some distance to span. Whereas I felt in Titus's work, I was immersed in something and I couldn't quite figure out exactly what that was, but it continued to reverberate for me. And I knew that I wanted to share that in Cincinnati. And I was just thinking about the right timing. And this particular crux, this turn of the years for us, where we're coming off the 75th anniversary and thinking a lot about memory, archive, and history, and then moving into the 25th anniversary of Robert Mapplethorpe's The Perfect Moment, when there was this idea that vision was obscured and there was some kind of trauma suffered, and now 25 years later, if we're looking for some kind of therapy or transcendence, it was this perfect moment, I think, so to speak, when Titus's project just made so much sense because of the context of the organization and the way that he's wrestling with so many of these themes and then animating them and then giving them a new language. And so all the timing, the situation, everything made complete sense, and I just can't wait for people to now experience this.
Titus, describe the project itself. Now, it's built around a 19th century house, right?
Yeah. So as the narrative, as the story started to grow and I started to understand what was actually going on, I felt like I needed to know where these individuals live, where their life happened. And I worked with this organization called Urban Miners when I finally found this location, the house. And I said, I need you guys to help me take this thing apart and bring it into an art gallery. And they were amazingly helpful. And so with that organization and Chuck Barone, who is a contractor who I've been working with for quite some time, we took the thing apart and we sort of broke it up so that we can put it back together again. And we've had a really sort of wonderful blessing being able to share this project with people through the generosity of Max and Monique Berger. They visited the exhibition in New York, and for them, they had been doing a lot of the reading about mental health issues, and they just felt like this was a really wonderful opportunity to share this kind of an exhibition with other people, so that they've made that possible.
Where did you find the house?
This is New England as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I live in Connecticut. I'm in New York quite a bit, but I live in Connecticut, New Haven. That's my home.
Is this the first time you've dealt with a house as a medium for art?
Well, it's really interesting. It is the first time I've dealt with a house as a medium for art, but I grew up working on houses. I was on a roof, shingling roofs at the age of 9 years old, honestly, and, drywalled and did all of that stuff. So it was, the materials were very familiar to me. I just hadn't used them in the context of making art before.
Okay, and what you've done is there are paintings hanging on the mm-hmm. walls of the house, and mm-hmm. you've got furnishings that fit the era mm-hmm. of the house, and that's also in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the paintings are what started this whole project. I started, trying to in a kind of, as a writer of historical fiction might do, I started trying to figure out what these people who I didn't have photographs of, what they might look like. And the more I invested in trying to figure out what they look like through sketching and painting in the studio, the more interested I became. And so those paintings are inside of the space. But the space, I want to be clear, it's not supposed to be thought of as just a sort of house. It's actually a psychological space. When you enter that first room, you're actually entering into the mind of someone who's struggling with these issues that mm-hmm. we talk about, beginning to understand that his family had been passing for years and he didn't understand that, and having to deal with his own sort of racism and all the things that he had been feeling, and trying to figure out where to place those feelings. When you move on to the second room, the structure, the house, his mind begins to come apart, and literally the walls and the floor separate, and there's this fissure that goes through the center of the room, and you see this person trying to hold on, and he's tied the ropes from wall boards to ceiling to floor, trying to make sure that this last effort to hold these things together works. And everyone around, all the viewers who walk through that space will begin to realize that it's inevitable, it's coming apart, but he doesn't realize it. And so by the time you get out of that last room, the walls are sort of floating and just kind of these Pangea separate continents wandering around the gallery.
Much like Benjamin Vesper, who had a psychotic break when
exactly.
he attacked your painting.
Exactly.
More about the Vesper Project coming up, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. The Vesper Project goes on display at the Contemporary Arts Center today. My guests are artist Titus Kofar and CAC curator Stephen Maticio. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Stephen, Titus is describing this really complex, very detailed installation. How difficult was that to get into the CAC? I mean, what kind of challenges did you have to overcome to get this in there?
Well, we know we had our work in store for us when we saw the semi roll up and about a million pieces come off of it. And like Titus said, this is these remnants of a house sort of coming together into an art installation, but nothing goes together in a 90-degree angle. This is very much a creative enterprise, and it's about the fracture. And so, Titus's contractor came through the early part of the week and we started to reassemble this structure. And then Titus come in and starts to add all of the customization. But with our architecture, which is so unique at the CAC and Zaha Hadid's building, obviously there's a level of customization and site specificity that needs to happen. And so all of these different parties and voices are all seated around a table, and we're all sort of trying to make order of it. But I think that's the beauty of the process.
Were you watching Titus and going, please be careful with that?
No, not at all. I mean, they have an amazing crew over there. They really did an amazing job. You know, the building itself is so conducive to this project. There's, you know, the space, each wall is sort of angled slightly, so you don't feel comfortable, and you're not supposed to. It forces you to engage at angles that you wouldn't normally. It forces you to get close to the piece in ways that you might avoid, which allows you to find all of the little things that I've literally inserted into the walls, into the wallpaper, into the floorboards, underneath the floorboards.
Stephen, if you had to describe this in one word, I'm going to make it very difficult. Is there one word that comes to mind that describes this installation?
Disbelief, I think. That's something that Titus spoke about early on, because it is this really, it's a physical manifestation of a psychological condition. And so you're trying to find your footing. You're trying to know where to step and what to connect and how to navigate your way through this structure. But it is like walking through a mine that's sort of in a tumultuous state. And so I would say that you're never quite sure what to believe or where to put your foot down. And the psychological and the physical start to overlap, and they start to come together. And we love that sense of disorientation. This is not your typical gallery experience. You're not going to walk in and sort of look at the perimeter and see objects hanging there. You're walking into this space, out of it. You start to see paintings, but they don't hang or look conventional. And so everything is about that disorientation, to take you into the mind space of this work, and then to allow it to work within your own self.
Titus, how have people been reacting to the Vesper project?
There's something that is familiar for everyone when they walk through. That's my experience, is that after anyone goes through that space, they say, you know, there was this old building in my community growing up that was like this, and we used to go there and we used to hang out as kids and do that. Or my grandmother had a drawer that looked like that. Or one of the things that's most exciting for me is that people really connect to it personally. When I first started working on this project, the psychiatrist friend that I was telling you about, I brought him over to the space, and he was just silent for quite some time walking through the front room. And finally he walked out and he said, you know, I've been to several patients of mine, their houses, and they feel like this. They may look slightly different, but they feel like this. And at that moment, I realized that there was something that was captured, and not wholly by me, but something in the presence of the objects, the materials in the space. You know, most of these objects are found materials that have a kind of aged presence that comes with them. They're not, you know, the newspapers on the wall in some cases are 100 years old. The floorboards are over that. All of these things come with a kind of presence, and I think you experience that, you feel that when you walk through the space.
Yeah, Stephen, it sounds like this is touching people at a very, very deep level.
You got it. We want, as soon as you come off the elevator or from the door, the stairs up into the gallery space, you're immediately ensconced and immersed into this mind space, and you walk through there, and it's meant to give you an experience outside of the typical gallery experience, you know. And we really want to cultivate that. The way that it's lit, you feel like you're kind of walking into this theatrical space, and yet it's highly visceral. There's so many textures, and we want, and like Titus said, there's painting, there's architecture, there's installation, there's sculpture, but they're all kind of woven together. And it sort of takes you through, you know, takes you through the artist's mind, and then opens you up into, to allow you to sort of incorporate that and to think about it as it reflects to you personally. And then we're also, you know, it's not just the Vesper project, but we've also showing a series of works from the Jerome project, which is Titus's most recent series. And I think that the more you see them together, the more you see the continuity and the overlap, which is really exciting for us.
Well, Titus, describe the Jerome project to us.
The Jerome project is a project that started a few years ago for me. I was separated from my father, and I was adopted when I was 15 years old. And there's no reason to get into the specifics of the detail of why all that stuff happened. But basically, after some years, I went back to visit my family in Michigan, and I I sort of ran into him, and it was a kind of disorienting experience for me because we had been out of touch for so long. I didn't really know how to deal with the situation emotionally, and when I got back home to Connecticut, to New Haven, I just started looking him up online to see if he had any sort of internet presence. And when I looked him up, I found his mugshot, and I found, which wasn't really a surprise to me. I knew his criminal activity. I knew all that. That wasn't a surprise. What was surprising to me is that I found close to 99 other men with exactly the same first and last name, all black men in the same situation, all mugshots on mugshot.com, busted.com. And it left me feeling extremely confused, and I didn't really know how to deal with the situation. And so I ended up going back and interviewing him and talking to him about his story and him sort of getting wrapped up in the criminal justice system. And what I realized is he sort of lost himself in this world for a good 15 years. And he's now recovering, he's now coming out, but it directed me towards the criminal justice system and looking at how someone finds himself in there. He wasn't dealing any sort of violent crimes or anything like that. There were other issues that he was dealing with that brought him into that situation, which just brought to light for me the hundreds of other folks in my community who were dealing with these similar kinds of issues. So in the work there, what you see are the series of drawings where I've taken, in most cases, many of those Jeromes and stack them on top of each other. So each of these men have the exact same names, and they're drawn on asphalt paper with chalk, and you see their faces overlap, but they're blurry, they're confusing. It's a contour line drawing on top of a contour line drawing on top of a contour line drawing. And so when you look at it, your eyes are trying to reconcile the images. Your eyes, your brain is saying, let's make this one individual, but it's an impossible thing. And after a while, it could actually give you a headache. But that's, in a way, that's kind of the point. This is a very—
That's kind of the reaction that you're looking
for.
It's
kind of reaction. Yeah. It's a difficult situation. The issues of criminal justice that we're dealing with in our society today are challenging to look at. So.
Now, out of the Jerome Project, Time Magazine, as I understand it, commissioned you to do a painting inspired by the events in Ferguson, Missouri. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I did. I started the drawings that are in this show. Are the sort of second stage of the Jerome Project. The first stage were these small devotional style paintings that I was doing based on religious Jerome paintings. They were submerged in tar based on the amount of time that these men had spent in jail or prison or initially locked up. And that's how it all started. It started with that.
And Time Magazine came to you and said they wanted you to do something based on Ferguson.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
It's a little difficult because that was how I was approached, but I said initially I don't want to do—
You were hesitant, I think.
I don't want to do it about Ferguson. I said this is an issue that's affecting the entire country. It's not about Ferguson, and as it's clear now, this is happening all over. It's happening. It had happened in Oakland, California. It happened in Detroit. It happens in cities. And so I wanted to make sure that folks understood that when I was approaching this, for me, it really wasn't about Ferguson. It was like this broader issue that I think we need to figure out a way to address. And so in the painting, I also recognize that the way that the media cycle works is such that you are interested in a conversation right now, but tomorrow that conversation may not be interesting. So the painting is depicted in a way that shows the simultaneous presence and absence. The whitewash is sort of erasing the figures as you see them, which I hope draws us in and makes us want to understand who these people are and what their experience is.
Stephen, the opening for the Vesper Project is today. Tell us about that.
Yes, it'll be open up at 6 o'clock to the public. It's absolutely free of charge, so we very much encourage everyone to attend. Titus will be giving an artist talk at 7 o'clock. That'll run from 7 till 8, and I highly, highly encourage you. You know, Titus will give a larger sense of the context of his practice, so you'll talk not only about the Vesper and the Drone Project, but about his larger, you know, cycle of works and practice in general. And then from 8 till 10, in the lobby space, we'll be doing a performance called Poems While You Wait. and it's by Mark Hart, a local professor at the Art Academy, and a series of his students. And so you can go there, you give your name, you give a subject, they ask you some questions, and then 15 minutes later you have an original piece of writing. And so it'll be, you know, a lot of things happening. And then we're also opening another exhibition tonight, Matt Morris with James Lee Byers, called The Perfect Kiss. So a lot's happening tonight, and it's absolutely free of charge. So, you know, it's a great time to visit the CAC.
Well, Titus and Stephen, thank you for talking with us this afternoon. Artist Titus Kafar and Contemporary Art Center curator Stephen Maticio. The Vesper Project will be on display at the CAC through October 11th. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.